This week on The Take, we're marking 1 year since a pair of devastating earthquakes hit Turkey and Syria with a new digital interactive. Listen and watch stories of survival, recovery, and coping with the grief at aj.audio/earthquakes. Again, that's aj.audio/earthquakes.
Al Jazeera Podcasts.
Another blow to UNRWA. A new US law includes a year-long ban on funding to the UN agency that supports Palestinian refugees. Washington stands with Israel, accusing some employees of taking part in Hamas attacks. What does this mean for the people of Gaza? I am Hashim Ahalbara, and you're listening to the Inside Story podcast, where we dissect, analyze, and help define major global stories. So how does the barrage of threats to UNRWA's existence fit in with Israel's war, and what would the consequences be for generations of Palestinians? All questions to raise with our panel. In Los Angeles, we have Lu'ay Al-Basyuni, a NASA scientist and Gaza native who was educated at an UNRWA school. Here in Doha, Tamir Qarmoot, another Gaza native, is professor at the Doha Institute for Graduate Studies, who specializes in international aid and conflict resolution. In London is Chris Gunness, currently the director of the Myanmar Accountability Project and formerly an UNRWA spokesperson. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us. Lu'ay, what was your reaction to the news that the US was withdrawing its funding for UNRWA for 2025?
You know, I mean, I don't want to say a stupid decision. It's based on a lot of ignorance and lack of knowledge. I mean, it's just really sad to see. I mean, it's in a way, UNRWA is an alternative to provide education, which actually bring people out of poverty, bring people out of, you know, actually educate them knowledge. So that's usually help toward peace, you know, actually stopping funding. I mean, it's not the first time United States do it, and stopping the funding actually in a way that will actually aid terrorism indirectly.
Tamer, the decision to stop funding, at least for this year, could it be an indication that perhaps it could just be part of a prolonged process where the U.S. will have to shut down UNRWA in the future?
Hashim, it's not a secret that Israel, for a long time, has been targeting UNRWA, even before the October 7th events in Gaza. UNRWA, the importance of UNRWA is what it represents. It's a living testimony of the Palestinian struggle, of the Nakba, of the 1967 war, of all the ongoing conflicts that Israel have launched on the occupied land with all its consequences, mainly the refugees. So UNRWA's establishment, UNRWA's mere existence is an international evidence, a living testimony of their rights, these people's status, legal status as refugees, and the rights they're entitled to once the final settlement for this conflict happens. And by targeting UNRWA, is basically Israel, if efforts to shut down UNRWA diminish it, succeed, then basically this would be a great relief for Israel, because for it, as long as, I mean, the dismissal of UNRWA means that there are no refugees. Israel has no consequences whatsoever. And the issue is, so I think the timing for me is the moral and the big question. I mean, the timing of this decision, it comes in the midst of a genocidal war, of a widespread famine in the Gaza Strip. Mm-hmm. And in these critical times, when you see also the ICG demanding for more expansion of aid, you need more international players on the ground to help with distribution, securing and distributing aid. And then the U.S. comes in this utter complicity with Israel, you know, ruthlessness, and passes this resolution. For me, this is a huge moral failure for the U.S. administration.
Chris, there was hope that the spending bill would include that article about the $350 million to be directed to UNRWA, given the fact its legacy, its history since it was established in 1949, and the fact that it caters for almost 6 million Palestinian refugees spread across many countries. That didn't happen. Is that an indication that the Americans are turning the chapter of UNRWA?
Well, it's not over till it's over. And there is a clause in this bill which makes it clear that in the beginning of 2025, the funding would return unless it's specifically opposed. So let's not make any assumptions about the US. But to be clear, this is a political attack, not just on UNRWA. A political attack on UNRWA is an attack on Gaza too, an attempt to de-develop Gaza, turn it into a Mogadishu, to effectively take it off the agenda. And that, in a sense, also is an attack on a two-state solution. And that, in turn, is an attack on one of the very planks, one of the foundations of Middle East peace. So make no mistake, although this seems like an attack on a UN agency, by a single member of the General Assembly that's gone rogue, and that's perhaps something we can talk about, what we're seeing is something much, much bigger. It's an attack on the Middle East peace process and on multilateralism itself. Now, as far as the attack on UNRWA is concerned, it's taken on a new and dirty turn, because not only was the dossier, the so-called dodgy dossier, on which these allegations were made against the 12 UNRWA staff members completely fake news, there's been no evidence produced by Israel for that. Now what we're seeing is the Israelis, in a further attempt to discredit UNRWA, they are blocking trucks going down to the Kerem Shalom crossing point. UNRWA, to be clear, can take in 50 trucks per hour. And what the Israelis are doing is they're blocking the trucks going to Kerem Shalom. They're then going and taking photographs of all the containers at Kerem Shalom and saying, oh, UNRWA and the UN are useless. They're not being able to deliver this aid in. No, it's the Israelis who are blocking the trucks from going down there. So there's a lot of dirty tricks in this. But I've been talking to sources in UNRWA. There are four Arab states that have come back or have increased their aid. The Saudis, the UAE, Qatar, and Iraq has pledged $25 million. Of course, this pales into insignificance compared to the $75,000 per year that the Saudis are giving to Cristiano Ronaldo, the footballer, or to Jim Mickelson, the golfer, who they've given $200 million to come away from the PGA Tour. But let's not even go there. The fact is that donors are beginning to come back. And although things are terrible in Gaza after 5.5 months of this relentless genocide, let's call it for what it is, UNRWA can now, they're saying, continue on until June. So let's see what happens. The big problem now is is getting aid, is flooding the Gaza Strip with aid. And to be clear, it's the Israelis are blocking that. We've now got this incremental attack on UNRWA increase. Not just was Philippe Lazzarini, the Commissioner General, barred last week from going into Gaza. Now we've got UNRWA being barred from the north. But to be clear, that is a violation of the provisional measures ordered by the International Court of Justice on the 26th. So this must go, the South Africans must take this to the court and say, here's further evidence of Israeli genocide. And by the way, the ICC, which does criminal personal liability, they are also investigating Israelis. So they can issue arrest warrants for Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant, the defense minister, just as they've done for Putin. So there's a lot the world can do if it wants to, not just to save UNRWA, but frankly, to save regional peace.
Let's try to unpack what does this mean for the people of, for the Palestinians. We've been talking about the almost 6 million refugees who live in different parts of the world. Luay, your life has in a way or another been shaped by UNRWA. In Gaza, when you started, you went to school there, you had your own dreams, and then you went to the US and you helped design the lightweight robotic helicopter for NASA's Mars 2020 Perseverance rover mission. Could you give us a sense of how was life for you back then when you were at the school run by UNRWA?
Not only about, you know, I mean, a big part of it is about education. I mean, like, you know, it's a big employer, so I mean, working with a lot of my teachers, this is jobs they give people. So these jobs, I mean, improve people's life. They actually, you know, encourage people to an education. I mean, UNRWA was considered to be one of the best employer in Palestine. So a lot of people like take a lot of pride in it that, you know, I mean, because, you know, they bring back to the community, you know, like, I mean, bringing up education and bringing out knowledge, I mean, bring people out of, you know, out of darkness. So, this is what helped me. I mean, you know, I mean, my first 9 years out of my K-12, I mean, like, we're all in UNRWA schools. I mean, it's very sad to see today, like, every single school I went to in Gaza's have been actually destroyed completely. And, you know, I mean, it's just like, you know, I mean, this has literally happened from the first day. They were attacking schools like being empty. I mean, they actually used demolition explosive to blow up the schools in Beit Hanun, which it seems very directly targeting education. Because, I mean, you know, in some ways, you know, I think, you know, that's targeting like the future of the Palestinian people, targeting the hope. There's big aspiration, like when kids see somebody be able to actually went to an honorable school and being able to be successful and make it somewhere in the world, be able to provide knowledge to the entire humanity and our entire planet. I mean, that's the way I really look at it. Mm-hmm. And so, I mean, it's really bad. I mean, it's really sad to see you pull out that investment. That's an investment into the future of, I mean, you know, I mean, not just like Palestinian statehood. I mean, it's future of actually, you know, bringing, you know, having humans to provide, you know, to the entire universe. I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, we just, so I mean, just taking anything that actually stopped education, I think it's a mistake. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, you know, in some way or another, we need to work on actually be able to bring back the funding or actually provide alternative. I mean, it is also like in north of Gaza, and Gaza is like, I mean, on our way, it's almost its own government. So, I mean, they run a big part of that, you know, the big part of the, you know, like medical systems and educational systems. So, I mean, a lot of that is going to be lost. You know, I mean, a lot of people will lose their jobs. So, I mean, you know, that's, you know, you can just imagine everything can come out of it.
Tamer, if we are to look for alternatives in the near future, who would step in and take over, given the fact that UNRWA itself has this long history and has shaped the lives of Palestinians in a way never done by any other organization over the last decades?
I don't think there is any other alternative to UNRWA as long as the Palestinian cause is still alive. I mean, there is no final settlement. There is no closure or a final peace deal between the Israelis and the Palestinians. I don't see there is... Because this is largely because of UNRWA's unique nature. I mean, unlike, for example, the United Nations Office for Human Rights, for the UNCHR, the refugee agency, which has a mandate to resettle, repatriate, or recompensate refugees, UNRWA's mere mandate is it was created to serve the Palestinian refugees until a final just deal takes place. And so it really depends on how this war will evolve, Hashim. I mean, if the entire scenario is, like your guests said, is to turn Gaza into a Tora Bora, meaning Israel still retains upper hand after this war is over, controls the reconstruction process, controls every aspect of life of Gazans, mm-hmm. De facto staying the occupier, then it's going to be an utter disaster. Of course, this will turn Gaza into a Tora Bora. I mean, imagine, UNRWA is a quasi-government, literally. It used to cater services to 70% of Gaza's population, whom are originally refugees. The remaining 30% are originally from Gaza. So if you take UNRWA away from them, you could go ahead and reconstruct Gaza, reconstruct infrastructure, but UNRWA is more. It's beyond infrastructure. UNRWA is about services, about hope, about everything that has to do with being a Palestinian refugee. So with UNRWA gone, I mean, it's going to be a disaster, total disaster.
Chris, now the U.S. is saying that it's going to redirect $175 million in funds to other humanitarian projects in the West Bank, in Gaza, and it seems like they are going to ask the U.S. aid and other UN agencies to take over. But are they going to be able to fill in the gap? Because when you listen to Lu'ei and Tamer, they're basically saying because of the symbolic image of UNRWA itself, the way it has been associated with the Palestinian plight and the Palestinians in Gaza in particular, it would be almost impossible to have an alternative.
UNRWA in Gaza, for example, has for decades been delivering food. It has 13,000 staff who are running nearly 200 schools. It's got 23 health clinics. And these are people deeply embedded in the community. There's a level of trust between the people of Gaza and UNRWA. And no one can just come in and replace that, which, by the way, it's so sad, and I say with deep regret, that people like Martin Griffiths, the senior most humanitarian in the United Nations system, is involved in talks about handing over UNRWA services, food distributions, for example, to WFP, the World Food Programme, as if they could suddenly parachute in and start doing food distributions. No, UNRWA has the culture. It has the culture both in terms of neutrality, because let me tell you, that is the best the international system has in terms of neutrality in Gaza. But also, UNRWA has the infrastructure. It has the trucks. It has the food distribution centres. It has the warehouses. But most of all, it has that culture. It's so deeply rooted in Palestinian society. And that's why I say that right now, UNRWA, we need to open up all of the crossings. The idea, for example, that USAID, Tamantha Power, the head of USAID, flew in a plane with aid, the Israelis had to subject that to checks. Are you really telling me that American aid is going to have contraband weapons that might go? That is the canard. That is the falsity. This is not about security. During the ceasefire, there were no restrictions. Aid just simply went to the north without any checks whatsoever. That is part of the Israeli tactic to de-develop Gaza and to destroy UNRWA. And I would tell you, the donors in the General Assembly, the other members of the General Assembly, they are the ones who decide what UNRWA's future mandate is, what future operations will be. Not a far-right rogue state, the state of Israel, that's trying to launch this political attack. And by the way, it's not just a political attack, it's an operational attack. They're trying to prevent visas. The UN system has between 50 and 70 visas waiting for approval. And by the way, it's also being done with the complicity of the Egyptians. It was the Egyptians who effectively stopped Philippe Lazzarini going into Gaza. They were the ones who said, you can't win. The Israelis don't even have a presence in Rafah. So, you know, there is this conspiracy by many others beyond UNRWA. There are UN officials who I think could do far more to step up and support UNRWA and stop this crazy conversation about handing over UNRWA services to WFP or whoever. Only UNRWA right now can stop mass starvation. And let's be very clear about that.
Louay, if I may ask you another personal story as a NASA scientist, I know that you must be most of your life pretty much preoccupied with looking after the dim lights of the very distant universe, looking for indications that it might unravel something very interesting about a potential for another life there. But then when you think about Gaza, where you came from, massive destruction, no more schools, no more hospitals, do you feel like that the international community is abandoning the Palestinian people, the people of Gaza?
Oh, abandoning, the majority, a lot of the international community, at least the government seems they are in cahoots they're part of a plan. It does seem systematic. Everything Gaza's going through, it seems like an active plan of ethnic cleansing. Destroying from the first day. I grew up in a Shifa hospital and, start seeing the propaganda building up against the Shifa hospital. And then it's like, you could see everything is being staged for a plan to clearly, even forcing UNRWA out of north of Gaza in the beginning. It seemed like that's to completely ethnic cleanse the north. And it seemed the whole world is sitting there and watching as they're like, it seemed like a pre-negotiated plan. And the only one is fighting is the people on the ground right now. Just by resisting and just live. It's extremely sad to see the world actually just witnessing this. My parents were trapped in Gaza for over 4 months. And, being actually, they had foreign passport and literally the German government completely ignored them. I didn't get any help from the U.S. government. The way I feel like they just don't care about us. We just another number, just people around the world that just, the worst of the world don't care about. It's like we can sacrifice these people to, for some other greater plan. And so it seemed like, money and, resources is the most important thing. And the life in the well-being of people, the future of humanity, I don't think is even an important thing. And that's like, it seemed like very directly from the policies. The timing of actually, forcing UNRWA, accusing UNRWA as part of actually, the part of ethnic cleansing. And I think, I'm not sure if like the U.S. is actually aware of actually they're participating and supporting and aiding. Not only aiding, and UNRWA in a way actually is aiding Israel in a way because, the financial responsibility of people under occupation actually go to the occupying power. So, you know, I mean, so in some ways, it's like, what's going to happen next? You know, I mean, I think there's a big question mark. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, okay. It's like, I'm not even sure what's going to happen.
Tamer, when you look at the list of the biggest contributors, donors, you have the US, followed by Germany, EU, Sweden, Norway, Japan, France. And then, which begs the question, why aren't rich, wealthy Arab nations stepping in to make up for the deficit? Do you think there is a political will or not for the time being?
Well, I think, sadly, I mean, since the onset of this way of normalization deal with so many Arab countries, between Israel and a number of Arab countries, I think the realities have changed. I mean, the political interests of Arab states have diverted towards a different agenda, common enemies between them and Israel, economic interests, political interests. I mean, name it. I mean, Palestine or the Palestinian cause has become a second or a marginal priority for them, and that's sad. The current war in Gaza, the severity, I mean, this genocidal war has exposed their utter complexity, I would say, and also weakness. They could, of course, they have, I mean, if they want to put more pressure on Israel, they have so many tools. I mean, especially the countries who have normalized and have recently signed peace deals. I mean, we see most of their ambassadors are still in Tel Aviv. Even withdrawal of ambassadors did not happen except for one country, I think Jordan, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. But it's, I mean, even when it comes to the minimum they can do, they're not doing it. And sadly, I think, I mean, we understand, I mean, this comes in the context of the larger Arab Spring. Hamas has its own position, and many Arab regimes consider it as a threat. But what happens in Gaza is not about Hamas. It went far beyond tackling Hamas. This is a genocidal war now that is really after everything that is Palestinian. This is where they have to step up and put pressure on Israel.
Chris, there are talks behind closed doors for the sake of a deal when it comes to Gaza. But it's no secret that there are also talks about what's next for Gaza, where the international community, the US, the Israelis are saying Hamas should have no say. We would like to have new entities taking over. Could this be an indication that when it comes to what's next for Gaza, the US in particular, followed by Israel, would like to make sure that the organizations which are going to look after the needs of the people should no longer be mostly affiliated with the UN and that a new mechanism is going to be put into place?
Well, that is certainly the ambition of the far right, the most far right government in the history of Israel, which is why it's waging this attack on UNRWA. But I would like to make some practical suggestions. First of all, the South Africans need to take the decision to block UNRWA going to north to the ICJ as evidence of genocide. I would like to see all nearly 200 members of the General Assembly, which gives UNRWA its mandate, stepping up and saying we will not allow one rogue member, plus its backer, to subvert the mandate and mission of an organisation that's going to stave off mass starvation. I would like to see the Security Council, which is due to debate UNRWA in the third week of April. They should bring that debate forward and talk seriously about what is going to happen. And I would like to see some red lines drawn by the major powers in the Middle East region. Turkey, for example, could say to Israel, UNRWA's destruction is a red line. If this continues, you will not be able to have flights flying over Turkish airspace. The Saudis, for example, could say, one of our red lines, the destruction of UNRWA, we will not talk more about normalization unless the Israelis commit to allowing UNRWA to operate. Because to be very clear, as I say, the political attack on UNRWA is a political attempt to de-develop Gaza, which is in itself an attempt to get rid, to destroy a two-state solution, which is one of the planks of Middle East peace. So nothing is at stake, nothing but peace in the Middle East is at stake here. The two-state solution is very much part of that. It will be set back by decades if Israel is to get away with destroying UNRWA. There is, you know, that's the scale of what we're talking about here. The destruction of UNRWA, it's of course about saving millions of people from starvation, but it's also about preventing a rogue state from wrecking peace in the Middle East for decades to come.
Gentlemen, we're running out of time, but hopefully we'll get a chance to further expand on this issue in particular. In the meantime, Luay Al-Basyuni, Tamer Kharmout, Chris Gunnis, I really appreciate your insight. Thank you. This episode was produced by Mohammed Al-Aishi, Fintan Monahan, Veronica Pedrosa, and Jima Harris. Studio sound was by Mohammed Osman. The program was edited by Anil Anandan, Zainab Badr, and Jody Frias. Be sure to subscribe to the Inside Story podcast to catch every episode. Thank you for listening. Tuning on Tuesday for our next edition.
Coming up on The Take, why is U.S. intelligence partnering with Elon Musk's SpaceX to build a network of spy satellites? That's The Take by Al Jazeera. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.